Hello, everyone. This is Marcus Robertson with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. Thank you for tuning in. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Jim Mazzuni, Chief Development Officer at Sage Dental, to discuss what DSOs can learn from the drugstore wars. Jim, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Marcus. I appreciate being here.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and dive into our discussion here. Becker's has reported on a torrent of drugstore and pharma mergers recently, to the point that regulators are beginning to take notice as well. So, Jim, I'm wondering what similarities or differences are you seeing in DSO mergers and acquisitions activity versus the drugstore space?
So I think there's a couple of things. One is, if we go back, in some cases, decades, the drugstore pharmaceutical industry was split up into dozens of branded concepts, some regional, some national, and almost all of them are gone. At this point, you've got Walgreens, CVS, you have the remnants of Rite Aid, but anybody who ever went to an Eckerd's or a Duane Reade or an Osco or a Savon or a Revco, and I could go on and on, those brands are all gone. They were swept up through the acquisition. And so I don't know if we'd gone back in time 20 or 30 years ago and we had predicted this, could we have said that this massive pharmaceutical industry was going to fundamentally revolve down into two brands, but you know that ultimately is what happened. And you know, as they continue to expand, both by building new locations, I'm talking about CVS and Walgreens, as well as gobbling up all these additional locations through these acquisitions, it got to the point in which, for the typical American consumer that lives in a city or a secondary market, even a tertiary market, it was not uncommon to have two giant drugstores, sometimes even three, on the same intersection or within a half mile to a mile of each other. And you know, clearly that was an oversaturation in terms of what the consumer actually you know, needed. And so as an example, when Walgreens purchased its share of the Rite Aid stores, they had to close over 600 locations simply because they were on top of their pre-existing location. You know, both CVS and Walgreens now are just about shy of 10,000 retail locations apiece. CVS has just announced that they're getting ready to close 900 of those stores, so almost 10% of their total store footprint over the next 3 years. Walgreens closing hundreds of locations, Rite Aid's closing hundreds of locations. And, you know, there's 60,000 places to buy prescription drugs in the United States by the time you count on just all the drugstores and the independents and places like Walmart, et cetera. And so I think acquisition is great, growth is great, but at some point it's got to be kept in ratio to the actual consumer and patient need. And I think as those large drugstores are competing against each other, maybe there's a little bit of hubris that if you build it, they will come. And I think, unfortunately for all of them, they kind of learned that they overbuilt.
Yeah. So you said, you know, to prevent oversaturation, these you know, expansions need to be kept in proportion, you know, or in ratio to the kind of the consumer population. And so I guess with those comparisons in mind, what lessons do you see that DSOs can learn from all this?
So it's interesting if we just kind of play with the math a little bit. There's estimated roughly 190,000 dental offices in the United States. And so if you divide the American population, every man, woman, and child, by the 190,000 dental offices, you get about one dental office for every 1,700 Americans. Now, obviously, they're not all equally spread out. You've got more in cities, you have less in rural areas. The actual incidence of dental use for adults is about 60 to 65%. It's obviously far less than that for children. So what that means is there's less than 1,000 possible patients per dental office in the United States. And if the average dental expenditure, and there's different estimates about what this is, but let's say it's around $400 per dental patient, then what you're talking about is roughly $400,000 of revenue per dental office in the United States. And I think that just goes to show that dental spending, dental expenditure spending is not some kind of infinite resource. There are very few areas in the United States, especially in developed areas, major market cities, in which the consumer, the patient is sitting around going, well, oh, I just wish that somebody would open up a dental practice near me because there isn't any. You know, the converse is true, right? Most people who live in a decent sized city, there's anywhere from 75 to 150 or more dental practices within a 15-minute drive time of where they live or where they work. So, and this is not true of rural areas. That's certainly a different conversation. But the average American has access to dental care. And so kind of this assumption that all of these various groups can simultaneously grow through both a combination of acquisition and de novos, and there's never going to be any kind of a competitive reduction down the road, I think that's just not the way it's going to play out. And that's one of the things that certainly we can look in terms of the drugstores and kind of the history of what happened on that consolidation. So I think, you know, for the DSOs, I think number one, you have to kind of understand what is the market opportunity. And then I think secondly, there has to be at least some understanding of what is it that I'm going to provide the patient? I'm going to provide the consumer, right? We don't often call patient consumers, but that's fundamentally what they are. They have the right to choose where they spend their money, where they get their dental services. What am I going to provide them that makes me different, differentiates me in some way from all my competition? I think a lot of DSO groups have historically defined themselves in terms of doctor outcomes. And I think if we were to go on the websites of a lot of the top DSOs, what you'll find is you'll find a lot of communication about the services they provide the doctor and possibly the team, but almost nothing at all about what they provide the patient. And we all, to be successful, absolutely have to define positive outcomes for our doctors. We have to take care of them. We have to make their life easier. We have to provide the clinical tools and assets and equipment and everything else. But to completely cut the patient out of the conversation and assume that we can all just kind of grow simultaneously without fundamentally kind of ignoring, fundamentally ignoring the patient, I think that's probably a mistake.
Yeah, kind of growing or building your house on a shaky foundation, it seems like.
Yeah, and if you look at CVS and Walgreens, and then you can go back when there was Eckerd's, or there still is Rite Aid, although they're significantly smaller than they used to be. If you or somebody in your family needs to fill a prescription, generally, I think the assumption of most patients is that prescription is going to be the same medicine, no matter which drugstore you get it at, and roughly going to be the same cost. And so how have they had to compete against each other, especially when they're in direct proximity to each other? So they've had to think about things like adding drive-thrus, right, or having curbside pickups, or about having reward cards and loyalty programs, about having to upgrade the retail part of their business. So, CVS tends to be a little bit cheaper generally than Walgreens, but Walgreens tends to have a little bit nicer retail storefront in front of their pharmacy. They've spent a lot more time and effort in terms of beauty products and personal care products. They both have now had to expand and start offering things like immunization shots and COVID shots and some basic medical services. And so those are all consumer driven conveniences and advantages to try to be competitive that went beyond their core mission of offering pharmaceutical products. And I think at some point, the dental industry is going to have to start thinking in terms of those same dynamics. What is it that I can provide the patients that makes me stand out, that makes it more convenient, that makes it a better experience? And so I think that's really kind of where the future in terms of kind of you think about how the DSO market may shake out. I mean, there's certainly some areas that I think it's going to make it very difficult to not have scale if we think about dentistry. One is technology. The rapid rise of technology, both hardware and software, is going to fundamentally, I think, change for the better patient outcomes. That's very expensive. So that involves a lot of investment. I think the whole insurance reimbursements without scale, like it's very difficult to successfully negotiate with the various payers in terms of having quality reimbursement rates. The supply chain has certainly completely gotten messed up since COVID, both in terms of cost and availability of both supplies as well as capital equipment. And finally, staffing shortages. So I think everybody is experiencing a lot of pressure on staffing, especially hygienists and dental assistants. And so again, that's something that kind of scale kind of comes into play. But it all has to be against the backdrop of a stronger patient proposition that allows each individual group to kind of differentiate themselves a little bit differently from everybody else.
It's really interesting you say that, practices are going to have to kind of, do what the drugstore chains began doing, find something new to offer the patients that currently isn't really there. I just find that interesting.
It's, you know, one of the interesting things that's really a big topic of conversation in the industry is AI, right? Artificial intelligence. And kind of what are the things that artificial intelligence can bring to the patient visit? You know, here at Sage, we use Pearl, in which, you know, years of historical x-rays, FMXs, can be downloaded within the software so that when the doctor comes in to treat the patient, they can already kind of see over a long period of time the changes in the oral health of that patient at a glance. And also it's annotated. It also makes it easier for treatment, presentation, conversation to the patient. So there's a small minority of dental practices in the United States today that are using AI, but I think at some point that's going to become table stakes. It took a while for a lot of dental practices to bring in, you know, PANCEFs into the practice. But, you know, now it's about cone beams, and that's really because implants have been such a huge growth driver within the industry, as more and more older patients no longer interested in getting dentures and getting removables. They now want to keep their teeth for life. So implants have grown significantly because of that. Well, that's a very expensive piece of equipment, but I think at some point it's going to be very hard to provide your patient with the ideal care if you've not invested in the cone beam technology. And again, I think over time you're going to see that become more and more commonplace. And I think potentially those groups or those practices that don't invest in those types of technologies or equipment are going to probably fall behind.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes sense. And if I can take just a moment, Jim, I'm a journalist. You have some journalistic training as well, so I got to brag on you. You've had quite a few wins recently for Sage. Sage Dental has had a really great 2022. Becker's reported on 14 new practice locations and, by my count, more than 140 new clinicians across Florida and Georgia alone this year. But as you were saying, you know, despite expansion, nobody wants to find themselves in an oversaturated market. And you talked a little bit about how focusing on the patient can mitigate some of that, but I'm wondering, how have you identified your target customers and carved out your niche while managing to do that?
So one of the things that we do is we use segmentation analysis. And so segmentation analysis is, it's kind of like an extra layer of demographic data. And so there's various services. We happen to use one called Mosaic, but what it does is, instead of just classifying people based on age or whether they have children or what their income level is, it actually gets deeper into various kind of lifestyle components. And so, for example, in Mosaic, there's like 85 different segment clusters. And so it goes beyond more simplistic demographic analysis of, are you a man, are you a woman, how old are you, etc. And so by doing that, we've really been able to identify what our active patient base, where they are most likely to come from within our own existing portfolio. And by really taking our understanding of who potentially our ideal target patient is in terms of how likely they are to come to Sage, how likely they are to stay with Sage, because retention is a really big, important piece of our business model. That allows us then to take a look at other areas of the United States where we're not at, and immediately understand how our existing best patient profiles compare against any particular other market. So that's one step. The other step is to really understand competitive dynamics. And that is both looking at the number of general dentists within a particular area that we might be looking at, as well as looking at the number of DSOs. And, you know, I feel really strongly that Sage provides an outstanding dental experience for patients. But again, I'm not so boastful that I'm going to say that if there's already eight other DSOs there, that we're going to open up a practice and immediately everyone's going to stop going to their other dental office and come running to us just because we opened the doors. That's just not realistic. So, you know, looking at areas that are potentially a little bit underserved, looking for areas that have growth in which there is room from a competitive standpoint. It's funny, if you pick areas that I would say are very hot. So Austin, Texas is an example of this. Nashville, Tennessee is an example. Maybe Phoenix, Atlanta, here in Florida. What you see is that there's a disproportionate amount of DSO development going on in a relatively small number of metropolitan areas. And Austin, Texas may be the fastest growing city in the United States, but the amount of dentists and DSOs that are opening practices in Austin is actually progressing faster than the population growth. Well, that just doesn't make any sense. And so I think a combination of looking at growth, looking at where competitive density is, where there still remains opportunity to open up dental practices where people are potentially underserved, together with kind of understanding at a deeper level who your best patient segments are, how your brand fits against those patient groups, I think can go a long way towards not making mistakes of just assuming that I could just build practices all day and they're all going to be successful.
So that segmentation analysis, you said, you're kind of identifying the active patient base within your existing portfolio, you know, maximizing your efforts with people you've already served. Is that fair
That's
to say?
Right. Yeah, that's right. And Sage is branded. So, you know, the answer might be slightly different for a non-branded DSO, but, you know, we're branded. So because of that, it's a little bit easier for us to kind of identify, okay, what does a Sage patient look like? I spent a lot of years in retail before I came into the dental side, into healthcare. This is something that's kind of second nature to a lot of multi-unit service, retail, restaurant concepts, is to get a really good understanding of, you know, what is our brand? Who does our brand speak to? Who is our typical customer? And then continue to kind of try to build your brand, build your core offerings, including your locations, everything down to what your locations look like. You know, what's the palette? What's the paint color? What's the kind of flooring that you use? It all has to kind of fit together so that you present a really cohesive quality brand statement. And when you do all that, it tends to allow you to be successful more often than not.
Well, there you have it. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jim. I think we've learned that if you are opening a new practice, maybe Austin isn't the place to look.
Yeah, this is not any kind of major secret, but Sage is not going to be expanding in Austin, Texas anytime soon.
All right. Well, fair enough. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you. Also, like to thank our podcast sponsor, Sage Dental. And for our listeners, you can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckerspodcasts.com.